Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean.
Moments ago, the numbers for America's economic growth, or GDP, were just released. And I am thrilled to announce that in the second quarter of this year, the United States economy grew at the amazing rate of 4.1%. We're on track to hit the highest annual average growth rate in over 13 years. And I will say this right now, and I'll say it strongly, as the trade deals come in one by one, we're going to go a lot higher than these numbers, and these are great numbers. During each of the two previous administrations, we averaged just over 1.8% GDP growth. By contrast, we are now on track to hit an average GDP annual growth of over 3%, and it could be substantially over 3%. Each point, by the way, means approximately $3 trillion and 10 million jobs. Think of that. Each point, you go up 1 point. It doesn't sound like much. It's a lot. It's $3 trillion and it's 10 million jobs. If economic growth continues at this pace, the United States economy will double in size more than 10 years faster than it would have under either President Bush or President Obama. Perhaps one of the biggest wins in the report, and it is indeed a big one, is that the trade deficit, very dear to my heart because we've been ripped off by the world, has dropped by more than $50 billion. $52 billion to be exact. It's dropped by more than 50. Think of that. The trade deficit has dropped by more than $50 billion. And that's added and adding 1 point to GDP. That's a tremendous drop. We haven't had a drop like that in a long time. You have to go back a long time before you find it. By increasing growth to 3% over the next 10 years, that would mean 12 million new American jobs and $10 trillion of new American wealth, at least. And that's not including the fact that since I was elected, we've created approximately $7 trillion of new wealth.
For those folks who've lost their job right now because a plant went down to Mexico, you know, that isn't going to make you feel better. And so what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back.
Yeah, they're coming back, some 4 million of them. Happy Friday. Glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. The president will join us today to talk about these huge numbers and the growth of the economy. And, you know, in just a little over 18 months, it does show that conservative economic policies do work. They always have. It actually was a little slower from Reagan, but things were a little bit different. I mean, when Reagan, what, it was 21.5% interest rates and double digit unemployment and inflation double digits. I mean, it was a mess, and it took a little dip, and then the Reagan recovery kicked in. It took about, I guess, till 1983 when that started happening. So much other good news. I mean, everybody that said this couldn't be done, I'm going to explain that in a second as it relates to the economy. Everybody that said, Well, what did we get out of Korea? North Korea, little rocket man. Well, what happened to that Singapore deal? Well, the president we saw earlier this morning on television, he concluded his remarks about 4.1% GDP. And he mentioned that after 65 long years, American heroes whose remains have been in Korea since they were lost in the Korean War are finally coming home to their families, which to me is a big deal. And, finally, these families get some peace. They get to lay their loved ones to rest. It's going to take some time. Obviously, DNA testing and so on and so forth will be a lot, involved. But these families deserve this, the very least. And the president fought for it, and he got it, and it's happening on top of no missiles fired over Japan, on top of literally dismantling a nuclear test facility, on top of hostages being sent home, and now we're talking about denuclearization, and not one rocket has flown over Japan since. Little rocket man, fire and fury, and my button's bigger than your button, and it works, did result in something beneficial to the American people on a lot of fronts. That is not one small deal, but we did see that literally they were in cases draped with the flag of the United Nations because they were there on fighting on behalf of the United Nations at the time. That was the reason. But anyway, they arrived this morning on a military plane outside of Seoul, South Korea, and its crew had traveled to North Korea to collect the remains, according to the White House, to transfer the remains from the 1950 to 53 Korean War had been negotiated during the summit when we were in Singapore. And one of the things that nobody had anticipated coming out of the summit, but on top of the good news for the families, the better part of this is that, it looks like Kim Jong-un really wants to continue the progress that was started even before the summit in Singapore. So that's all good news. We had the good economic news about, there's not going to be the trade war that everybody predicted. You notice everybody predicts everything, and they all turn out to be so wrong so often. But we have this GDP increase. We have the European trade war averted. I always said, I don't think the president wants a trade war. I don't think that we're going to have protectionism. I think the president realizes and recognizes that we have trade and we want free trade, but it hasn't been fair trade. And now the president's negotiating better deals and we're doing better as a result of it. Just like everyone was upset that the president demanded that NATO, that they start paying their fair share of NATO. We're paying 70 cents of every dollar, 3.5% of our massive GDP, 70 cents of every dollar. And these other countries, this is about their security. The evil Russian nation, the hostile regime of Vladimir, and people like Angela Merkel are literally signing billion-dollar natural gas deals with the guy that, NATO is supposed to protect them against. It's like making Russia rich again. A part of the deal with the European Union, the president's negotiating, and I'll try and ask him about this today when he joins us in the next hour, is, can we send our natural gas over to Europe? Is there a way to transfer it that's affordable, that's competitive, that would literally wean our European allies, Western European allies, off of Putin's energy, and which would be in their best national security interest? Even if they paid a little bit more, it's still worth it for national security reasons. I mean, all that Vladimir has to do is turn off the spigot, and then we can, then they're going to be in big economic trouble all across Europe. We can't have that. Now, with the 4.1% GDP number that came out today, one aspect of it largely ignored, the wide-ranging revision to the GDP versus the national debt ratio released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. I haven't seen anybody report this yet except Zero Hedge. But what it showed was pretty interesting. On a real dollar basis, which is important, the U.S. economy is estimated to have reached an $18.5 trillion level in the second quarter of 2018. If you want to put that number in context, the last pre-revision number was $17.4 trillion in the first quarter, now revised to $18.3 trillion. And by the way, this means that this revised number that the U.S. economy, you know, they're anticipating to be $1 trillion higher, which will mean that the U.S. debt to GDP ratio drops significantly. That's good news for our kids and grandkids. And economic growth is one of the best ways to get out of any debt and deficit issues that you may have. I think also one of the underreported stories is what the president has been pointing out, that by negotiating better trade deals, that, well, that helps American manufacturers and American factories, and that helps the American worker. And what we learned today also is the trade deficit, because as the president pointed out, we have been ripped off by the world, even by our so-called allies, has dropped by more than $50 billion. And I'm a free trader, but I believe in fair trade. And there's nothing wrong with negotiating better trade deals. But if you don't ask, you're not going to get a better trade deal. If you don't pressure, you're not going to get a better trade deal. And yeah, sometimes that means pressuring our allies that have no problem whatsoever in telling us that they want an unfair trade deal that benefits them. I want to take you back a little bit here. Really good catch by Gateway Pundit today, because when you listen, we're 101 days out of what I'm calling the most important midterm elections in our lifetime. And you're going to listen to Democrats, and they're going to use their old phony playbook because it's all they've got. You know, Republicans are racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. They want dirty air, water. They want to kill your children, and they want grandma to be thrown over the cliff. And putting that aside, there's we know their agenda this time. There's nothing that they're advocating for to make the country stronger or better economically. Nothing. And their agenda is to impeach the president, but don't say it. Their agenda is eliminate ICE and open borders in America. Their agenda is keep Obamacare. A lot of good that's done, everybody, with, well, so much for the promise of, you know, keep your doctor, keep your plan, save less. Just the opposite happened. They want their crumbs back. This is an amazing thing. They call it crumbs, the tax cuts, but they desperately want that money back because that is the base of their power. And then the last thing, of course, is they want to stop. Let's stop exposing the deep state that tried to steal the presidential election on their behalf. Forget that part. So there's a lot at stake in this election because all progress will stop. You think it's bad now with the Mueller investigation and everything and the trials of Manafort coming up, blah, blah, blah. You think that's you think it's nothing compared to what they really do. But you notice this good news on the economy today, we went from the lowest labor participation rate in the 70s. We now have the highest labor participation rate ever. We have record low unemployment in 14 states, record low unemployment for women in the workforce, for Hispanic Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans, and for veterans that are looking for work. Thank God they're getting a good piece of the recovery right now. When you listen to these Democrats and they go out to try and scare you, well, let's go back and take a trip down memory lane. You know, remember, Obama said these jobs weren't coming back. It's such a remarkable achievement in a short period of time that it's bad news for the Democrats in search of their power. But just before the election, CNN Money was telling you Trump promises 4% growth. Economists say no way. L.A. Times, if Trump thinks he can get more than 3% economic growth, he's dreaming. Wall Street Journal, Trump's 3% growth target looks out of reach. The Hill, Trump's growth projections leave economists in disbelief. New York Times, Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman, Trump's election means we're probably looking at a global recession with no end in sight. And Obama tweeting, what magic wand does Trump have to revive the economy? Usually the answer is he doesn't have an answer. Mark Cuban even said, in the event Donald Trump wins, I have no doubt in my mind the market tanks. You want to put those people back in charge? Let's see. We had 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation rate in 40, 50 years, worst recovery since the 40s, 51-year low in home ownership. Now we've got a recovery that's real, that's impacting. Manufacturing jobs are coming back. Anyway, we'll get into more of this as we continue and how it impacts 2018. 101 days away. This is important. Why does America seem to forget so quickly how bad things were. How is it even possible that we forgot how bad the Obama economy was? A president that never had a single year, the only president in history, 3% GDP growth in his entire presidency. How is it we forget 13 million more Americans in poverty, on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty? How do we forget accumulating more debt than every other president before him combined? A president that basically lowered all expectations. These jobs are never coming back, rather than fighting for the jobs that have now been coming back and fighting for the people in these industrial states, Midwestern states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. All these people now, all these companies now, you get rid of the regulations, you get rid of the burdensome taxation, you pressure them to build in America, creating a better business environment for them. And, you know, if you build it, they will come. And they're coming. And they're building. And people are getting jobs. And people are less dependent. Millions now off of food stamps. They're now back in the labor force. And our vets are doing better. And if you break it down demographically, women and African Americans and Hispanic Americans and Asian Americans, they're all doing better. This is the forgotten man and the forgotten women. And all these liberals can hope for is what? That the president fails because they want their power back more? Because that's their position they're in. 25 now till the top of the hour. Yeah, it is about the forgotten men and the forgotten women in this country. That's what matters. And the people, the millions that are now off of food stamps, back at work, and now have better futures and their shot at the American dream. And it's all with freedom and ending huge, massive government intrusion into our daily lives. It has become an untenable environment for businesses to breathe and succeed. It's hard enough to start business when people risk everything they have to try and build a business. And then, of course, they get demonized by the left. Oh, big business. Oh, big oil. Oh, big pharmaceutical. Oh, big pharmaceutical that creates drugs that save our lives. And yeah, they make a big profit. Or big oil that has to get the oil out of the ground because we need it to heat our homes and run our cars. You know, or big whatever. It is unbelievable. I don't know anybody in business that ever has an easy time of it. You know, the idea that goods and services that people provide them to other people, and you hope and you pray you can build a customer base, and that while you're making money, you're serving other people. As if somehow that's bad. You dig deep, you work long hours, you sacrifice, you risk a lot in the hopes that you know, things might work out for you. And for some, it doesn't. Or maybe you just want the job that's going to keep you and your family secure. So you can get a decent house in a safe neighborhood, drive a decent car or truck, you know, go to Disney, you know, when your kids are seven, a vacation every year, whatever. Go out to eat once a month, twice a month. It's very hard for the average person. Americans have to go in debt. And the government wants more and more and more and more and more. And if you're in business, they make it harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. And finally, a president says, enough. Clean up these burdensome regulations. Clean up this ridiculous taxation. You know, companies are not stupid. Why do you think these companies park their money overseas? Because they can't afford and don't want to pay confiscatory tax rates. So they go to so-called tax havens. And there you have trillions of dollars that could otherwise be used in America, building American manufacturing centers, American factories for American workers, using American steel, building American cars. You know, I don't have a problem with trade. But I mean, the fact that we just gave up on all of this and we've demonized capitalism, demonized business, you know, missing fundamentally what freedom is supposed to be all about. If we're free people, then we ought to have the freedom with not having literally, you know, we're tied up in knots by government regulation and government. I mean, it's costing business so much that they'd rather just leave. Why do you think these companies have been moving down to Mexico to build their factories? Because they can't take it anymore. And this president says, you know what? Enough of that. Come back here. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to end those regulations. The president has asked specific industries, what's hurting your business that the government's doing? You know, what can we do to help you? What can we do to get out of your way? What are we doing that's costing you a fortune that you want to build elsewhere? Or the fact that, you know, we're repatriating trillions of dollars that these companies have parked overseas. I mean, Apple, you think, is spending, the president mentioned today, I forget, it was an astronomical sum of money in America. Well, we buy a lot of Apple products. Americans buy Apple products. I mean, why wouldn't we want them to build their products here? Why don't we go into cities like Flint, Michigan, or other cities that have been, you know, go to Detroit, or any of these other cities that need revitalization after, you know, government is just burdened and pushed them down. It's unbelievable. Everybody predicted this couldn't happen. It's now happening. Remember the speech Mitt Romney gave if Trump was elected? He gave it in 2016. It wasn't just Democrats. It wasn't just the media predicting Trump is going to be an economic disaster. A lot of these never Trumpers never understood why Mitt Romney, who everybody, a lot of the people that voted for Trump voted for Romney. We just didn't get it over the top. I think he would have been a good president. I think he's a very good and decent man. I don't know. It's that anybody that loses the presidency, I don't know what happens to them. You know, I'd be a whole lot happier to vote for Mitt Romney, you know, but I he was wrong on the Trump economy. You know, literally, you know, if Donald Trump's plans are ever implemented, the country would sink into a prolonged recession. His proposed 35% tariff-like penalties would instigate a trade war and have to raise prices for consumers and kill our export jobs. I just have known Donald Trump longer than other people, perhaps, but I just know that everything with him, everything, is a negotiation. You know, I negotiate the time that he does interviews with me. I'll say, can I have 25 minutes? I'll say, I'll give you 10. I say, come on, I need 18. I'll give you 12. I've had those conversations with him when he was a candidate. I don't get to have him as much as everybody thinks I do when he's president, but he's going to come on in the top of the next hour. You know, the president wants to get rid of Obamacare. We did get rid of the individual mandate, which is just a tax because people were forced into having insurance policies that they didn't want, that weren't any good for them, etc. Now, I want to go into, this is a big story of the Washington Times that nobody seems to have picked up on. It looks like Hillary Clinton had a lot more direct connection to the anti-Trump dossier than perhaps we ever knew and was previously reported. Anyway, according to the Washington Times, the dossier author, Christopher Steele, personally briefed Hillary Clinton's lawyer, Mark Elias, around the time that Steele was trying to get the FBI to use the bogus dossier to launch an investigation into then-candidate Donald Trump. From the Washington Times, it says the Clinton campaign received a steady flow of briefings on its paid-for Christopher Steele dossier, whose unverified, now debunked, Trump-Russia collusion charges made their way into election news stories and Clinton talking points. The House Intelligence Committee reports Chapter 4, titled Campaign Links to Russia, details the dossier to Clinton flow. Finding number 39 states that Christopher Steele's information from Russian sources was provided directly to Fusion GPS, name redacted, and indirectly to the Clinton campaign. Mark Elias is with the law firm Perkins Coie, the DNC's lawyer, their attorneys, personally briefed by the foreign national Christopher Steele, who himself has said, well, it's raw intelligence 50-50. And then it was used and spread to you, the American people, so that you would believe the lies that they paid for from Russia. So you would vote for Hillary because you believe these things about Donald Trump that were not proven, never verified, not corroborated, and mostly debunked. And by the way, Mark Elias, he's not just the DNC attorney. Once Hillary was nominated, he became the general counsel to her presidential campaign. Well, that means whatever important information he got, I'm sure he shared with her. When are they going to bring her in for testimony? Never mind the notes from Trump's Russian translator. I want to see the notes from the meeting where Mark Elias briefed Hillary Clinton on the things he heard from Christopher Steele. Anyway, Washington Times goes on. A person whose name was redacted led regular briefings that contained Steele's information for senior Clinton campaign staff, which included campaign manager Robbie Mook and campaign chairman John Podesta, the report said. Mr. Mook did not respond to the Washington Times. Shocking. And with news that this summer that Russia hacked Democratic computers, I'd love to see the servers. Can anyone find the servers? Or maybe see what evidence Assange has, considering he put it up. Let's find out what he knows. I assume he would know where he got it from. And by the way, who hacked into her own servers that she had in the mom and pop bathroom closet? And of course, her deletions. Do we ever find the deletions? How did the DNC tell the FBI, no, we're not going to hand you the server. We'll hire our own person to investigate. Well, that's a brilliant plan. I'm sure that's going to work for all of you when the FBI comes knocking on your door one day over something. No, I'm going to hire my own person to look over the computers if you don't mind, sir. Good luck with that. Just like good luck with deleting subpoenaed emails, acid washing your hard drive with bleach bit, and then busting up your devices into little bitsy pieces and taking out your SIM cards. Good luck with that. You know, with all the news here, and according to one congressional staffer, quote, of course they used the dossier. They paid for the dossier, and the people they paid gave the dossier to the press and the FBI before the election. Apparently John Brennan, our CIA director, was also spreading it to Harry Reid. So, you know, that right there is the campaign using the dossier. Their operation, their phony dossier full of Russian lies bought and paid for by them. Everyone's trying to say, well, what if Trump knew about the Don Jr.? Nothing happened in the meeting. And let me ask a question. You know, Chris Wallace actually made a really good point about this today. It seems to me, he says, the worst you could say, assuming that Michael Cohen's telling the truth and that Donald Trump lied back in 2017, but okay, it's not admissible or admirable. You would hope he wouldn't, but you know what? If you lied to the media, it's not breaking the law. There's no law broken here. And on top of that, there are reports that congressional testimony contradict all of these reports from fake news CNN. And Lanny Davis denied it. That was more breathless fake news coverage last night. You know, and I just wonder how many politicians in Washington, senators, congressmen, they get a call, oh, I got op research for you. We already have a call with, of all people, Adam Schiff, Schiffless Schiff, who's the biggest liar in America. He took a call from a Russian thinking it was a Russian that had dirt on Trump, and he was all too willing to take it. When is somebody going to investigate that? It turned out to be a prank call, and he got totally duped. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, this will drive some of the crazy news media nuts. The president said, yeah, I'm willing to meet with Putin in Moscow. That's great. I'm Putin. All right, what do you want? By the way, Matt Gaetz went after Paul Ryan. And he called it low energy oversight after blocking Rosenstein's impeachment. But they still have a means, as I told you yesterday, to get it on the House floor. So that's going to be something interesting to work for. And, you know, I got to tell you, these are very, very interesting times. But there's a lot at stake in this election coming up. There's a great piece on Breitbart that I thought nailed it. And they basically gave the math of what the GOP has to do to maintain their majority in the House. Otherwise, you know, open borders, Obamacare, impeach the president, and crumbs going back. You know, they analyze it this way. And I thought their analysis was actually pretty good. And what they have is the GOP must hold on to 61 of 86 seats There's only 100 of 435 seats in the House that are competitive this cycle. 86 of those seats are currently held by Republicans. If Republicans want to stay in power, they got to hold 61 of the 86 and then flip three of the 14 Democratic seats that are competitive. Anyway, the outcome would reduce the current number, which is, you know, now currently configured a 45-seat advantage, 240 to 195. Republicans now have, they analyze, 154 safe seats, 61 holds and three flips from Democrats will result in the 218 the Republicans need in the 116th Congress. This doesn't happen. This is going to end up being an unmitigated disaster. And you say, well, my Republican congressman or senator sucks. He's weak. There are rhinos. I say it doesn't matter unless you want all of these things that I just mentioned to happen. Democrats have 181 so-called safe seats. Adding 11 holds, 25 flips from Republicans to those safe seats would result in 217 Democratic seats in the 116th. So you got 61 competitive House seats in Republicans' hand, you know, and then we have a list of them. I'm going to go through this with Bannon tonight on television. All right, the president's going to join us talking about the great economic numbers from today, GDP. But, you know, I don't think if the president cured cancer, if the president gave every American $30 million, I still don't think there are people that are just so obsessed with hating him. The amazing thing that we're now seeing to me is that it's like the boy who cried wolf. It's like the just breathless, hysterical, daily, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. It's noise at this point. And it doesn't make any sense. And it's not helping anybody. But they just can't even help themselves. It's so pathological. All right, the President of the United States joins us next, exclusively, Sean Hannity Show.
For those folks who've lost their job right now because a plant went down to Mexico, you know, that isn't going to make you feel better. And so what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back.
Moments ago, the numbers for America's economic growth, or GDP, were just released. And I am thrilled to announce that in the second quarter of this year, the United States economy grew at the amazing rate of 4.1%. We're on track to hit the highest annual average growth rate in over 13 years. And I will say this right now, and I'll say it strongly, as the trade deals come in one by one, we're going to go a lot higher than these numbers, and these are great numbers. During each of the two previous administrations, we averaged just over 1.8% GDP growth. By contrast, we are now on track to hit an average GDP annual growth of over 3%, and it could be substantially over 3%. Each point, by the way, means approximately $3 trillion and 10 million jobs. Think of that. Each point, you go up 1 point. That doesn't sound like much. It's a lot. It's $3 trillion and it's 10 million jobs.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, there was Obama saying, yeah, in his own words, that some of these jobs, they're never coming back. The only president in American history never to hit 3% GDP growth in a single year. And he's accumulated more debt than every other president before him combined, including 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. And we've gone from the lowest labor participation rate in history now to the highest. And that's only part of the economic story of today. Explosive 4.1 GDP growth. Joining us now is the president of the United States, Donald Trump. Mr. President, congratulations. And on top of that, I think one of the more underreported stories is that we now have a trade deficit that dropped by more than $50 billion.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. And you're right. That's, to me, is so important. Your phase two of the question, $52 billion drop in trade deficit. That hasn't happened in decades. And it's really something very special. And a lot of that is because of the policies that we're putting in place. And it's going to get better, Sean. It's totally sustainable. I look so forward to next quarter. I look forward to watching what happens over the years. It is something very special that's taking place.
How is it that trade is so interconnected to all this? And a lot of people thought you're going to start a trade war with Europe. Well, that was put to rest pretty much this week. And you said you found a new favorite word, which is reciprocity.
Well, reciprocal is very important to me because, you know, we have countries out there, Sean, and most of your folks know exactly what I'm talking about because they'll watch and they'll see. We have countries that charge us a 100% tariff or tax, and we charge them nothing for the same product coming into our country. We have countries charging us far more than that, close to 300% in certain cases. And yet when I say, well, we're going to tax them or we're going to be reciprocal and charge them the same 300%, everyone goes crazy and they say, oh, you can't do that. It's not free trade, which is sort of laughable when you think about it. In other words, they can do it, but we can't. So those days are over. And I think that's had a huge impact, even though it's very early. I've only been doing this a little more than a year and a half with some of these. And the policies, really, it takes a while to get them enacted. But it's having a tremendous impact. And if we can straighten our trade, which I'll do absolutely, and it's already happening. You see what happened with Europe yesterday. But as we straighten our trade, we can pick up a lot of points on GDP.
To be clear, though, you don't want a trade war. You want free trade, but you want fair trade.
Right. I want fair trade. I don't want trade that people think is fair and free, but we're being charged 50%. As an example, China, and I have great respect for President Xi. I think he's a friend of mine. He may not like me so much anymore, but we'll be friends again. But China charges us 25% when we send a car to China to be sold. When they send a car to us, we charge them essentially nothing. They say 2.5%, but it's not even collected. So they get 25%. We get, like, nothing. And it doesn't make sense. It's not fair. You can't compete. That's like a baseball game. I give an analogy. That's like you're having a big game with a very good team, and they score 15 runs in the first inning. So the score is 15-0. Now you're going into the second inning. It's not looking good. That's what happens when they charge 25% and we're charging 2.5% and not collecting. Essentially, that's what's happening, and we can't do that. And we don't do that anymore.
You know, one of my criticisms often, a theme on both radio and TV, is the fact that the media is so corrupt and so one-sided, and it's like every day they have a breathless thing, negative thing to say about the president. We're 101 days away from the midterm elections. I'm arguing, in my view, that it's the most important midterms in our life. But if we go back to 2016, the Gateway Pundit actually picked up some really interesting headlines that if you would have become president, you would lead the economy off the cliff. I'll read you a few of them. CNN Money said Trump promises 4% growth. Economists say no way. The LA Times said if Trump thinks he can get more than 3% economic growth, he's dreaming. The Wall Street Journal said Trump's 3% growth target looks out of reach. The Hill wrote Trump's growth projections leave economists in disbelief. And you got your Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman. Trump's election means we are probably looking at a global recession with no end in sight. And I can keep going. And Barack Obama, who never reached 3% growth in a year, said, what magic wand does Trump have to revive the economy? Usually the answer is he doesn't have an answer. I guess their predictions were wrong, sir.
Well, we've had the answers during the debates, and I think we were very strong in the debates on what we want to do. And if you look at the predictions, they've all been wrong. I mean, we are far ahead of what anybody thought, except me. We can go a lot higher than this. You know, if you look at regulations, nobody talked about regulations. Had my opponent won, the Democrats, you would have had an economy that instead of being up close to 40% in the stock market, they would have been down 40 or 50% because the regulations were choking this country. And I'm all for regulations for clean air, clean water. We want to have great environmental control. But they had 10 regulations when you could have used one. And as you know, I've been cutting 22 regulations for every new one, new regulation that's put in, which are very few, because we were totally overregulated. You couldn't do anything. Highways were taking 20 years to get approved. You have a highway that's really important. It would take from 17 to 20 years to get your approvals. By that time, the highway system is different and the roads are being built a different way and you couldn't make changes. No, this is, we're doing great. We could do a lot better. The fact is that if I can cut the trade deficit from $817 billion, think of that, we have a trade deficit with other countries. That's trading with other countries, $817 billion. If I cut it in half, right there we'll pick up 3 to 4 points. So you could add that to the 4 or 5. And so we'd be at 8 or 9. Now, I don't want to say that too much, and I didn't want to say it too much during the campaign because I would have been criticized. People wouldn't have believed it. But now they're starting to believe. And you're right. You look at a guy like Krugman. He doesn't know a thing. I mean, the predictions were so bad. A big factor, though, Sean, was regulation. And obviously a big factor was the taxes. But a lot of this... really, the taxes are going to help in the future. I look so forward to seeing the next quarter because this is so sustainable. This is going to go for a long time.
You know, we have numbers that are in now, and all during the 2016 campaign, I gave statistics out. I did it every day because I wanted people to know what 8 years of the Obama economy were. And, you know, lowest labor participation rate, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. He took on more debt than every other president before him combined. You now have accumulated your track record. We have nearly 4 million new jobs in the country. We have the largest labor participation rate in history. We have literally nearly 4 million new jobs created in manufacturing, jobs that people thought weren't going to come back. Well, that's nearly 700,000. Then we've got 2 or 3 million fewer people on food stamps, record low unemployment in 14 states for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, and a 65-year low for women in the workplace. That's pretty impressive. And now 4.1% GDP. I think that we can make a comparison that some economic policies work and others do not.
Well, you're really right. And I've heard those statistics from you for even a long time. And now when you look back, it's hard to believe that we put up with it. And much of it was caused by bad trade deals. People don't want to say much of it was caused by regulation and overtaxed. I mean, you're overtaxed. Think of it in the election coming up in now just a little more than 3 months. The Democrats want to raise everybody's taxes. They want to give back these massive tax cuts that we got and reforms that are so good for everybody, but the tax cuts. So they want to raise people's taxes. They want to open up borders. They want to get rid of ICE. I mean, the things they're doing are so destructive. We won't have a country. So
they want their crumbs back. Well. They want their crumbs back. They want open borders. They want Obamacare. Yeah. They want to impeach you, and they want to stop all investigations into deep corruption.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of corruption out there, but it happens to be on the other side of the ledger, the Democrats. And if you talk about collusion, the collusion is there. There's no question about it. But it's with the Democrats and Russia, because all you have to do is look at what they did and how they participated with Russia. It's a, you know, disgraceful situation. But for the economy, we can go a lot higher. And, you know, people don't talk. We have $21 trillion in debt. When this really kicks in, we'll start paying off that debt like it's water. We will start paying that debt down. We're $21 trillion, a number that is, you know, unthinkable. But that will go down very quickly because the numbers with growth and the kind of growth that we've produced, the 4.1 can actually go higher. I look forward to seeing next quarter because I think that the 4.1 is just a stepping stone. But when we make good trade deals, Sean, it's going to have a huge impact on GDP growth. Mm-hmm. And the numbers will be so big that you'll actually start paying down debt in very large chunks. It'll go quickly.
All right. The president has graciously agreed to spend more time with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue on this Friday. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right. Next hour, we'll be taking your calls. Dinesh D'Souza checks in as well. 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. All right, we're going to have more with the president coming up in just a minute, an exclusive interview he gave us after these 4.1% GDP numbers. Huge win for the American people. bad news politically for Democrats. But I want to play something that is really important. All these Democrats that predicted nothing but failure, and the same ones that supported Obama's 8 years of failure.
Some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have?
Imagine him being in charge when your jobs and savings are at stake. Imagine him trying to figure out what to do in case of an emergency. So it's no wonder, is it, that risk analysts listed Donald Trump, a Donald Trump presidency, as one of the top threats facing the global economy, ahead of terrorism.
He has no real strategy for creating jobs, just a string of empty promises. And maybe we shouldn't expect better from someone whose most famous words are, "You're fired."
Trump and conservatives in Congress are planning a big tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. To justify it, they're using the oldest song in their playbook, claiming tax cuts on the rich will trickle down to working families in the form of stronger economic growth. Baloney.
This isn't just about the unemployment rate. It's about wages rising in our country so that consumer confidence is restored, because our economy will never fully reach its possibilities unless we increase the consumer confidence. And that can only be increased by the better deal, better jobs, better wages, better future, and lowering costs to families.
Frankly, even on the economic front, he got a lot of grief about trade from even fellow Republicans while traveling in the Midwest. So today felt like an attempt, and you could even hear it. He kept veering from his remarks and then going back to the remarks and extending them even longer, but all in a sense of trying really hard to say, hey, please pay attention to the economic story and ignore all the other stuff. I get it. Politically, he needs to do this, Savannah, but I can tell you there is a sense of where you overhype something, and there were so many times in those remarks that it felt overhyped on how he was talking about the economy.
I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point, and by the way, I'm hoping for it, because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy, so please bring on the recession.
All right, unbelievable. On the other side, part two, my interview with the president after today's GDP numbers. Hey, listen, if you want to be a responsible gun owner, and I know most of you are responsible and you believe in the Second Amendment, and you have a family that lives with you, a wife, kids, maybe grandchildren visit, you need to make sure that you do everything in your power to keep them safe, the firearms safe, that is. And that's why our friends at the USCCA, they want to give your entire family a 100% free, it's a guide, it's an audiobook for complete firearms confidence. That means safety. Now, if you go to Defend Family right now, it's brand new, and it's called Kids and Guns Guide, the Kids and Guns Guide. You're going to learn the most dangerous mistakes that put children at risk, proven strategies for teaching gun safety to kids the right way, 8 life-saving tips to be a responsible gun owner in terms of owning and storing a weapon, and a whole lot more. Now, it's never been easier to educate every member of your family. This guide is truly life-saving, and it's 100% free. Now, it's only available for a few days. Don't miss it, because protecting your family is too important to put this off 1 second longer. Don't leave people vulnerable. Be a responsible gun owner and go to defendfamily.com. Get your free guide and the complete peace of mind that comes with it. That's defendfamily.com. Defendfamily.com. Your family deserves this. All right, we'll take a quick break and more of my interview with the president right after the release of the GDP numbers from earlier today, the economy, and so much more as we continue.
Veterans unemployment is at its lowest level in 18 years, and that number is rapidly going up, on top of which we just received and won from Congress choice where veterans can go out and see a doctor if they can't get service, the service that they deserve. Unemployment for disabled Americans has hit a record low, lowest in history. More than 3.5 million Americans have been lifted off food stamps, something that you haven't seen in decades. 3.5 million Americans have been lifted off food stamps. That's because they were able to go out and get a job, and they're going to love their jobs. 95% of American manufacturers are optimistic about their company's outlook, and that's the highest level also in history. And that's an old survey, been around a long time. Manufacturing wages are expected to rise at the fastest rate in over 17 years. Business and consumer confidence has reached historic highs. So far this year, American exports are up nearly 20%. I've only been here a little more than a year and a half, over the same period in the year before I took office. We've become a net exporter of natural gas for the first time since 1957. When I came into office, 1.5 million fewer prime-age Americans were working than 8 years before. We had lost almost 200,000 manufacturing jobs under the previous administration, and you all know, they say, well, you have to lose manufacturing jobs. It'll get worse and worse. Manufacturing jobs are obsolete. No, they're not obsolete. They're the greatest jobs we have. More than 10 million additional Americans had been added to food stamps past years. But we've turned it all around. Once again, we are the economic envy of the entire world. When I meet the leaders of countries, the first thing they say invariably is, Mr. President, so nice to meet you. Congratulations on your economy. You're leading the entire world.
All right, the president from earlier today, GDP growth at 4.1%. As we continue with the president of the United States, I was with you in Singapore. I was also in London and in Helsinki. Now, one of the promises that Kim Jong-un made to you, and we still have not had rockets fired over Japan. Our hostages were released. We're talking about denuclearization. One of his launch facilities has been dismantled, but now the remains of Americans have come home. Are coming home, and we saw that earlier today, but also NATO is also paying more money.
Well, a lot of things have changed since I became president, and when I was with President Obama in the Oval Office, which I guess is something that presidents do, they have a meeting, and I had a very interesting meeting, but he did say the biggest single problem that our country has is the problem with North Korea. And he was very perplexed, and I can understand that, and it could have led to war. And I did ask, have you spoken to him? And the answer was no. And I said, you know, to myself, it would be a good thing to speak. We did meet. We had a great meeting, a very, very great meeting. I mean, I think you could have lost 50 million people more. If you think that Seoul is 28 million people, it's right on the border. You know, people say hundreds of thousands, not hundreds of thousands. We're talking about 50, 60, 100 million people could have been wiped out and lost. We had a great meeting, historic. And among other things, where the remains are starting to come back, missiles have been stopped. We don't have rockets and missiles shot over Japan. The hostages, we got them back. Even before I left, we got them back. Nuclear testing, no more. Rocket testing, no more. So many things have changed. And, you know, one thing, all of their propaganda material and the propaganda, which has been up for years, propaganda, the signs, the music, it's all stopped. It's all been taken down. So many positive things have happened. And, you know, we have time. There's no rush. I told my people, don't rush. We have sanctions on. We haven't taken any sanctions off. And we hope, I look forward to the time when we do take the sanctions off, because when that happens, a lot of good things will have happened on the other side. But so we're very proud of that. I'm very proud of the fact that with NATO, they were taking in less and less money every year. But last year, which was my first meeting, they took in $44 billion more because I said, you have to pay your bills. We were paying for everybody else. And this year, we raised by at least hundreds of billions of dollars. So we took in $44 billion last year. And all of that goes toward protecting, most of it, toward protecting against Russia. And then they say, I'm friendly with Russia. Russia's not happy about what I did with NATO. Russia's not happy about all of this tremendous amount of money that now is flowing into these countries who weren't paying their bills. I mean, they were delinquent in many cases, and certainly bringing up the pipeline where Germany is paying, as you know, Sean, Germany, nobody brought this up. Nobody even knew about it. But Germany's paying to Russia billions and billions of dollars for energy coming out of that pipeline. And I said, wait a minute, we're protecting against Russia.
It's nuts.
But you're paying billions of dollars toward Russia. Nobody brought that up but me, and I'm very unhappy about it, and I told them that.
I hope we can eventually, because we have more energy resources than anybody in the world. Last question, sir, because I know you've got to run.
Well, that's happening, Sean. That was part of the deal I made with the European Union. They're opening up
big that's millions of jobs for Americans in the energy sector. That would be great.
That's right.
Let me ask you last question, because I want to go back to the election in 101 days. And I see the agenda just as you described, and I've been saying it as well, that they want to, A, impeach you. We know they just tell everybody to stop saying it. They want the tax cuts reversed. They want their crumbs back. They want to eliminate ICE, open borders, keep Obamacare, stop investigations. I don't think I don't hear anything that is going to help the American people. But in midterm elections, historically, the party in the White House in power usually loses seats. And right. I know to prevent that from happening, you kind of have to buck the trend. There's usually about a 15-seat loss. Mm-hmm. What do you say to people in this audience that maybe, well, you're not on the ballot, that support you but don't particularly like their rhino congressman or senator?
Well, my endorsements seem to have a lot of weight. If you look at Georgia, the governor of Georgia, he was down 5 to 10 points, and he won 70-30. So he won by 40 points. Many others. I mean, you can look at New York congressmen. You can look at all of these different endorsements. And what I told my people just now, I said to General Kelly, I said to a whole group of people, we have to get our group together. Give me the top 25 Congress people that are, you know, could go either way. And I want to go out and campaign for those people. Likewise with the Senate, because we're going to fix everything once we have the votes. You know, we really don't have, when they say a majority, it's 51-49, but it's not really, because you lose a couple and people are sick, people are ill, people can't come to vote. So in the Senate, we really don't have a majority at all. And it's a very small, in the House, it's a very small majority. So I think we can actually, because of a couple of things that are happening, very special things are happening for our country. You mentioned North Korea. You mentioned our military is being rebuilt, so many other. But look at the economy. The economy may be the strongest it's ever been in the history of our country. Now, you know, the famous quote, it's the economy, stupid. Well, if it's the economy, then we should do very well. I just don't know any reason why we shouldn't do well. We're doing well with our military. We knocked out ISIS. We've done so well in so many, and ISIS would have never been knocked out. Now, you got to keep on it. I don't want to be saying we knocked it out. You got to keep on it. But we have decimated ISIS. So many things have taken place, but the economy is the strongest ever. And I think that's going to have a very positive impact. And I am going to work very hard. I'll go 6 or 7 days a week when we're 60 days out. And I will be campaigning for all of these great people that do have a difficult race. And we think we're going to bring them over the line. So I really believe that because we're doing so well as a country and so well with the economy, I think we're going to be surprising a lot of people.
All right, Mr. President, I know you're busy. Thank you for taking the time. Congratulations, 4.1% GDP growth. Thank you, sir, for being with us. And hopefully we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sean. Thank you.
We're going to hit our phones. We have a very special guest today, and we're very honored to have him. Elwood, or his name is really Woody Snell, and today is his 100th birthday. Born July 27th, 1918, raised on a farm in Ohio, and literally was a hero, fought in World War II for this great country, has an incredible life, and we wanted to say happy birthday to Woody. Thank you for being with us. Happy birthday, sir. And you're a great American. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I think you're a great American, too.
Oh, thank you so much. You're very kind. I mean, did you ever in your life think you'd make it to 100 years old?
Well, I never thought about it. I just kept plugging along. And and finally, when I got up to 99, I got to wondering about it then. I thought maybe I might make it.
Now, your health, I hear, is very good. Obviously, your mind is very sharp. Is there anything special you've done to keep yourself healthy and so strong these years?
Well, I try to walk as much as I can, which is getting shorter all the time. And I'm quite a vitamin freak. I take a lot of vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a wonderful, wonderful wife for 63 years, and she took good care of me.
Let me ask you about this. So you grew up, as I understand it, on a farm in Ohio, and you graduated from high school in 1938. I read your whole bio, and then you went to fight in World War II. Tell us about it.
Well, I graduated in 1936.
Okay.
And then I didn't go to war to fight a war. I went to the Air Corps to learn how to be an airplane mechanic. I thought that was a coming thing in this world. And then the war came along. And I was very, very fortunate in the war. I finally became a crew chief on a C-47 in a troop carrier outfit. And
wow.
When I got to be a crew chief, I got to flying all over the United States, hauling different things to different air bases. And
wow.
Then in January 43, we were sent over to India, and we went into the northeastern area of India, and we had to fly into China through a valley in the Himalaya Mountains called the Hump. And the reason we had to do that was because China was completely blockaded by the Japanese, and the only way the 14th Air Force could get any material was through this hump by us taking it over by plane. And we did that, and we also flew down into Burma.
You're a member of the India-China-Burma Wall of Fame. And by the way, you even got a medal from the government of China honoring your service in World War II. Wow.
Well, I got all those medals, but what I got is called the Air Medal. It's a medal from the Air Force for flying those 1,500 hours. And I'm very proud of them. I was a master sergeant when I was discharged, and I'm a very proud American, and I always be a proud American.
I want everybody to know, because a high percentage of these planes, historic, and crews crashed. And at that time, there was no way to rescue any survivors.
No, there wasn't. And that was called the Aluminum Trail, because when you flew over from India to China or China to India, you could look down there and you could see these crashes laying around different places. It didn't give you much faith in where you were going over there at the time.
Well, I want to say, listen, first of all, happy birthday. Second of all, you know, you just remind myself, my dad fought in World War II. He's been gone a lot of years now, but all of the World War II vets were heroes. And, you know, your love of God, family, country shines through you. I wish you another 100 years of good health and happiness and peace. And thank you for all you did for us. And happy birthday.
Well, thank you. It's a very honored, deeply honored thing to be able to talk to you, sir. Very honored. You're a great American.
Sir, you're a great American, and the honor is all mine. God bless you, and happy birthday. I hope you have a great day today and every day. Thank you, sir.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
I'm very kind of upset about these famous millionaire football players desecrating our flag and our national anthem. I wish I could take one of them guys over there and show him where these people are, what they did for our country. But I am so ashamed of these guys that can't even stand up and salute the flag. That really bugs me to death.
Bothers me, too. I'm not even going to watch. I'm watching college football now. That ought to be the one thing that unites everybody.
I think so, too. I'm greatly appreciated to be able to talk to you, sir.
All right, my friend. God bless you always. We appreciate all you did for us. And happy birthday, sir. Thanks, Woody. All right, 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll take a break. We got a really, really special Hannity tonight. We're all over the place tonight, including the president on the good economic news, Jeanine Pirro, Bannon, Geraldo, Jim Jordan, and a little more of my Roseanne interview. That's 9 Eastern. Set your DVR. Hannity on Fox. Quick break. We'll continue.
Some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And
when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have?
Imagine him being in charge when your jobs and savings are at stake. Imagine him trying to figure out what to do in case of an emergency. So it's no wonder, is it, that risk analysts listed Donald Trump, a Donald Trump presidency, as one of the top threats facing the global economy, ahead of terrorism.
He has no real strategy for creating jobs, just a string of empty promises. And maybe we shouldn't expect better from someone whose most famous words are, "You're fired."
Trump and conservatives in Congress are planning a big tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. To justify it, they're using the oldest song in their playbook, claiming tax cuts on the rich will trickle down to working families in the form of stronger economic growth. Baloney.
This isn't just about the unemployment rate. It's about wages rising in our country so that consumer confidence is restored, because our economy will never fully reach its possibilities unless we increase the consumer confidence. And that can only be increased by the better deal, better jobs, better wages, better future, and lowering costs to families.
I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it, because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. So please bring on the recession.
We lost $817 billion a year over the last number of years in trade. In other words, if we didn't trade, we'd save a hell of a lot of money. And our leader said the only choice was economic surrender. They surrendered. And by the way, even the politicians in Washington, nobody wanted me to be doing what I'm doing. The country was doing well, but ultimately it was going to be a very bad thing for our country. So I did it, and I did it when we were the strongest. We're having the best economy we've ever had in the history of our country. This is the time to straighten out the worst trade deals ever made by any country on earth ever in history. These deals were made by people, I don't know if they didn't understand or if they didn't care or if they didn't frankly love our country. But we have the worst trade deals ever made in history.
All right, that was the president obviously talking about the great economic news. He just joined us in the last hour. If you missed it, we'll have him on Hannity tonight. 4.1% GDP growth. By the way, it's happened just, you know, a handful of times since 2000. And I got to tell you, it's everything that Obama said couldn't happen. I mean, like, well, these jobs aren't coming back. What do you mean these jobs aren't coming back? Why don't we make an environment where they can come back? That's the whole point. Don't tax corporations into oblivion and don't regulate them into oblivion. Let's start there. And we literally now have nearly 4 million new jobs since the president's elected. On top of that, we've got the largest labor participation rate we've ever had. We have record unemployment in 14 states, record unemployment for women in the workforce, African Americans in the workforce, Hispanics in the workforce, Asians in the workforce, 14 state records. It's unbelievable. And now we also, on top of that, I think one of the underreported issues, which we asked the president about, is, you know, a $50 billion reduction in the trade deficit that we have in the country. And on top of that, we have this week in the news that came out that the president, who I said never wanted a trade war, but he's going to negotiate for freer and fairer trade. Well, that's happened with the European Union. Imagine this. We have more people, more jobs available rather than we have actual people on unemployment today. This is all flipped and turned on its head in just a little over 18 months. But don't worry, your media will be talking about Stormy or Russia tonight. Anyway, joining us now, Steve Moore. He is a distinguished visiting fellow for the Project for Economic Growth at the Heritage Foundation. Alfredo Ortiz is the president and CEO of Jobs Creators Network, was responsible, by the way, for getting word out on the president's tax cut bill for earlier this year. And by the way, they have been advertising on our show, and I hope you will sign taxcutsnow.com, which is their website, to make them permanent, because Nancy Pelosi wants her crumbs back. Steve, let me. Well, not only Nancy Pelosi, you guys are laughing, but she actually said they're crumbs and she wants them back. And by the way, Elizabeth Warren not only wants them back, then she wants to tax everybody at 50%.
Well, you know, Sean, I saw the president about 3 or 4 weeks ago out at Mar-a-Lago. And as you know, I worked with him with Larry Kudlow on the campaign. We helped design the tax plan for him. And you know, he was in a good mood. And I just spoke for him for a minute. I said, you know, Mr. President, these numbers that are coming out are better than we even, you know, we drew it up on the chalkboard, Sean, and they're coming out better than we thought. You know, we didn't think it would work this quickly, this powerfully, but it's great news. And, you know, you could add to those numbers you were just talking about. Did you see the construction numbers are the highest they've ever been? Did you know manufacturing is the highest it's ever been in the history of this country?
By the way, how many new manufacturing jobs? Isn't it between, what, 500,000 or more just in manufacturing alone?
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at from the day of the election to today, because the expansion really began the day after the election when people realized that Donald Trump was coming in and businesses are forward looking. So we've created, when you look at mining, construction and manufacturing, those are the three kind of core blue collar, you know, middle class jobs in this country. 850,000 of them have been created in those three industries alone. And we lost jobs in each of those industries under Obama.
Yeah. And Steve, you know, and the funny thing is under Obama, he's the one that said those jobs can't ever come back. The country.
Yeah,
right?
They're not coming
exactly.
back.
What a joke. I was in Wheeling, West Virginia yesterday with the vice president. And I'm telling you, every single one of those people in that room, they are excited about the economy coming back. Manufacturing's coming back. Coal's coming back. Steel's coming back. It's exactly what Obama said wasn't going to happen in this country. It's happening right now.
He said they're not coming back. Well, if you created a business environment where they can come back, they're going to come back, and they're coming back.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. One thing, you know, there's two things that I know for sure. One is that deregulation works, tax cuts work, and Trump means business at the end of the day here.
Yeah, well, you know, to what extent, I mean, I agree with Steve what you're saying that, you know, we didn't expect it to happen this quickly. And the reason you thought that is because, you know, when Reagan took over, I mean, it was a disaster. We had double digit, you know, interest rates, unemployment rates. I mean, it's just a fiasco. And in the case of Obama, it was just no recovery at all. And finally, now you see the potential, but a lot of it is rooted in the fact that the regulations, you know, we've gotten rid of so many of these burdensome regulations and the incentivizing of companies, and also the president, frankly, putting the pressure on these companies, build here, you know, stop taking your products to Mexico, because if you bring it back, we're going to tax you. Which I thought was, you know what, these guys do. And for the American people, I'm willing to pay even a little bit more for a Carrier air conditioner. If I get a new air conditioner, it's going to be a Carrier. These car companies that are building all over the country, I'm going to stay with those car companies.
Well, and Sean, I think what you said at the beginning, too, about Obama, was that he basically declared economic surrender, right? And leadership starts at the top. If you don't believe in your own country and what your workers can do, what your people can do, you're done. You're history. And Donald Trump, from day one, has believed in this country in terms of what it can do and its American workers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And you know what? The people that are benefiting are the American workers, the forgotten men and women, which is what this election was all about. We forget that. There's a reason these states, Alfredo, that they went so heavily for Trump. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Not exactly the easiest states for a Republican to win. But they got so sick and disgusted over all of this, they said, forget it. We've had enough of this. They've watched entire cities like Detroit get decimated and our industry leaving and Pittsburgh, our steel industry. The president was speaking to them yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And, you know, Steve and I went around the country several times, did a couple stops together talking about small businesses also. Small businesses in this country were devastated under the Obama administration between overregulation, right, too much red tape, overtaxation, and the lack of access to capital and credit. And this president, this administration has tackled all three of them, right? 22 regulations off the table for everyone introduced. Taxes at the lowest levels has been in history, really, almost for almost 40 years. And thanks a lot to really Steve's efforts, by the way. If it hadn't been for Steve Moore, this also would not have happened. So, Steve, thank you for that. But then also finally addressing the issues that Dodd-Frank created by, you know, Dodd-Frank basically eliminated over 2,000 community banks, Sean, and that now the credit is coming back to these small business owners, and these small business owners their optimism is sky high.
No, I think that's it. Yeah, go ahead.
Just a quick point, you know, when Donald Trump used to ask Larry Kudlow and I on the campaign, you know, what do I do to get the economy moving? And we used to just say jokingly, but only half jokingly, just look at everything Obama has done and do the reverse, you know, and you kind of look at it. And that's what Trump has done. You know, Obama regulated. Trump is deregulating. Obama taxed. Donald Trump is cutting the taxes and getting the obstacles out of the way. And the kind of animal spirits of the economy are so powerful. And I got to tell you, I'm so happy to do this interview with you today because I spent all morning on. As you know, I'm with fake news now. I have to do CNN, and they had the hardest time this morning trying to figure out how to put a bad spin on these Austin numbers. It was just,
well, what were
was
you
hilarious.
Drinking the day you signed that contract? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I am regretting it but it's kind of fun to watch them try to, you know, say, well, this is one guy said, this is really Obama's effect, the Obama effect. I said, yes, the effect that Obama isn't president anymore.
Yeah, and Alfredo, this is an important question because I know that you're advertising on the show. And we really do appreciate your support, but it's an important message. And that is that the Democrats do want to rescind these tax cuts. Their agenda is clear. They want to impeach the president. They want their crumbs back. They want to eliminate ICE, open borders. That's not good for the American worker either. And then on top of that, they want to end all regulation and they want to keep Obamacare. That's all they run on. There's nothing else that they're offering the American people. And if we rescind the tax cuts, then we put back the regulations, then there goes all the economic gains we've just made.
Yeah, Sean, absolutely. I mean, and that's the craziest part of all. You know, Nancy Pelosi promising to repeal the tax cuts. Chuck Schumer is promising to repeal the tax cuts. Elizabeth Warren is promising to repeal the tax cuts. And frankly, she's saying, hey, 50% plus is actually pretty decent. I mean, I don't know what kind of world they've operated in, but we obviously saw what happened when Obama was in charge. And that's the environment and the overall economic prosperity wasn't even in their vocabulary. And now they are trying to repeal it. It makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, I think this is one of the things that we're trying to get out there on our taxcutswork.com site is really the knowledge of what's actually happening, the real news. Because, you know, Steve, you said your best. CNN is struggling to try to figure out how to actually put a bad spin on this. There is no bad spin. The numbers are working. The efforts are working. And what the president has done, he understands how business actually operates. And he's putting things in place. And Sean, you know, we even did an op-ed today that talked a little about the tariffs, because I know there's been a lot of conversation about that. But, you know, the president is acting on the tariffs right now, not just for tariff's sake, but he's really trying to fix what was a broken system for years and years now, decades, in fact. Really, and this is the time to do it, right? When times are good, that's when a business person invests back in their business. And that's what President Trump is doing, is investing back in our country. And this is the time to do it. When you have 4.1% GDP growth rate, that's when you can take a little bit of flexibility and invest back by doing these kinds of things that he knows are temporary. He doesn't want tariffs, right? In his ideal world, there will be no tariffs at all.
All right, final moments here as we continue on this Friday. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. By the way, our friend Dinesh D'Souza stops by at the bottom of this hour. But final thoughts as we get from Alfredo Ortiz, president and CEO of the Job Creators Network, and our friend Steve Moore, who's a fellow, distinguished visiting fellow for the Project for Economic Growth at Heritage. Final thoughts, Alfredo.
Sean, bottom line is in November, we have a very, very important election because it's going to be the difference between the type of prosperity that we are seeing today, that we are experiencing today when we saw that 4.1% number. Donald Trump and this administration and this Congress understands what it takes to move things forward and to create positive growth in our economy. If we lose control of the House, that will all go away. So we urge folks to understand what's going on, get out there and vote, and we got to make sure that we vote for the free enterprise system, which we are seeing working now.
Steve, last word.
Oh, these numbers just make you proud to be an American, don't they, Sean? I mean, we got, as Trump said today, and he borrowed this line from the Wall Street Journal, the American economy today is the envy of the world. And it hasn't been that since the Reagan years. And what it really proves, Sean, is that ideas have consequences. You put in place pro-business, pro-growth policies, and they make a big difference for Americans. Incidentally, this is the first businessman president we've had in a long, long time, and it really shows.
Yeah. All right. Thank you both. Stephen Moore, thank you. Alfredo Ortiz, thank you. 800-941-SEAN, Dinesh D'Souza. And yeah, our Florida Georgia Line Friday concert series, put your party light on. It's almost time. It's almost Friday, although we do have a great Hannity tonight at 9. I'll tell you about that next. Joining us now, we have our friend Dinesh D'Souza, author, filmmaker. He's got a brand new project out. It's called Death of a Nation. What's amazing about this, it's a film, and it takes on everything we talk about, which is the left's unrelenting campaign to blame Trump, literally, for everything horrible. All their predictions we were talking about the economy, yeah, that got blown out of the water today yet again. That's two huge economic bits of good news this week. The growth of GDP, and yeah, there's not going to be a trade war with our European partners, and yeah, they might end all tariffs altogether, which is great for American workers. Anyway, here's a clip from the film.
Lincoln was elected to unite a country and stop slavery. Democrats smeared him, went to war against him, assassinated him. Now their target is Trump.
America was never great!
Donald Trump wins the presidency.
So help me God.
They say he's killing America.
There will be a vote to impeach.
They say he's a racist.
This was a white lash.
And a fascist. Who are the real racists?
Northern Democrats had conspired together with Southern Democrats to take away the fruit of other people's labor.
Who are the real fascists?
Both Mussolini and Hitler set up and ran welfare states.
This was done by the do-gooders, the liberals, the people who wanted to improve society.
Which party attacks our free speech, our religious liberty, and our personal safety? A nation dies when its people are not free. We too must fight for freedom, regardless of the price we pay. The stakes could not be higher. We're talking about America. The greatest nation on earth. Lincoln saved America for the first time. It's now up to us to save America a second time.
How many times have we said on this program that America's at a tipping point? Well, now filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza, also an author, here to talk about his project, Death of a Nation. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you again.
Sean, great to be on the show. I'm excited both about the book, which is out Tuesday, and then the movie, which opens nationwide next Friday. Both are called Death of a Nation.
Yeah, good for you. You know, I wish it weren't true. I wish that, you know, I didn't have to expose what I believe is the biggest abuse of power scandal in history. I spent a lot of time today talking about economic policies of the last 8 years that failed. And yet America seems compulsively drawn back to the socialist appeal because it is based on lies of redistribution, et cetera, and government can solve all our woes. And every time we break away from it, we see just the opposite happens, and we get the economic growth and opportunity that really should be defining America.
Well, if you think about it, Sean, you know, when was the last time that a major political party, you know, A, refused to accept the result of a lawful election, B, tried to destroy the president who won it, and C, showed themselves willing to destroy the country in the process? Well, that hasn't happened before in our lifetime, but of course it did happen in 1860. The Republicans elected a president, Lincoln. He was an outsider. The Democrats basically decided, we won't have him. We're going to break up the country. We're going to try to get rid of him, even if with assassination if necessary. So all this craziness that has actually not been a part of our lifetime, but that Lincoln would recognize if he were alive today, is coming back. And remarkably, it is the same political party, the Democratic Party, that is doing it once again.
You know, I mean, you go through a history. One of the things that frustrates me as a conservative the most is the narrative we get every 2 and every 4 years, and we're getting it again already this election. And I've gone back and I've done the history of advertisements, political advertisements, and it's the same thing. Republicans are racist, they're sexist, they're misogynist, they're homophobic, they're xenophobic, they're Islamophobic, they want dirty air and water, they want to kill the children and throw granny over the cliff. And all of which I am saying here has been said. And I just, it drives me nuts because that's not who I am, nor is it any conservative I know or would ever want to know.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that, Sean, and we all know that's true. But the fact of the matter is that because the left is so dominant in academia and the media and the whole entertainment industry, not just Hollywood, but the music industry, Broadway, they have most of the comedians. So they're able to put out these narratives that, by the way, long predate Trump. I mean, the idea that fascism is on the right, that started around World War II, right after World War II. The idea that the two-party switch sides and the Republican Party is now the party of racism, that was concocted by the left in the 60s. So these lies are in our textbooks. They're told on the History Channel. They're on Wikipedia. And so part of my work in the book and the movie is to take these things on, dive into the heart of the matter, not only expose it intellectually in the book, but then put it on the big screen so people can actually see for themselves that we are suckers for a big lie. And once we debunk the big lie, I think, Sean, when we take away the left's race card and their fascism card, they have no other cards left. They'll be exposed for the frauds that they are once and for all, once we debunk these two big ideas.
You know, I just say it a little differently than you, because I think what the answer is, and there's something that the entire country should be looking at today. You know, the president before us didn't hit 3% GDP growth for a year in his entire presidency. And we went from the lowest labor participation rate. Now we're at the highest. And we have millions now, fewer people on food stamps. He added 13 million people to the food stamp rolls. We have 4 million now new jobs in America, and it's growing rather quickly and expeditiously. Millions are out of poverty. It's a dramatic shift and a dramatic change. And, you know, with all the media and hysteria about Trump every day, the one thing that you can't get beyond is the facts that his policies are working and they're helping the forgotten men and women in this country. And we're now setting records in every category for, you know, for those that break things up demographically, for women, for Hispanic Americans, African Americans, for Asian Americans, for all Americans. And they're now getting the opportunity that didn't exist for 8 years. And I don't think there's any amount of propaganda that's going to switch people's minds from that truth and reality.
I agree with that. And now, this is why I think that the blue wave of November is going to prove to be, it's going to peter out for sure. And I think of my own example. I mean, I'm a non-white immigrant, as you know, Sean. I came to America with $500 in my pocket. And as I stayed here and as I looked at the two parties, I realized that one party, the Republican Party, stands for ladders of opportunity. That's the party that helps the guy who's starting out at the bottom to make his way up based upon his own strength, his own skills, his own merits, and also luck. The other party stands for ropes of captivity. The basic idea is the Democrats are on top of a building. They're letting down a rope. They want you to hang on. They promise they'll pull you up. They'll look after you. But it finally occurs to you, they're holding the rope. And if they let go, down you go. So I said to myself, I would much rather be the party of the, I'd rather join the party of the ladder than become a victim of the party of the rope.
All right, Dinesh D'Souza, it starts next Friday. It's called Death of a Nation. It's going to be in movie theaters around the country, and the book comes out next Tuesday. Great to talk to you again, Dinesh. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Let not your heart be troubled. Hannity tonight, we have an amazing show. We're 101 days out of this most important midterm election. We're going to look at all the battlefield contests that matter. You need to know these and get to memorize them. And a battle plan will be drawn. Jim Jordan is running for speaker. We'll talk to him about that tonight. Janine Pirro, Geraldo Rivera, and more of my interview with Roseanne Barr. The response has been unbelievable. That's all coming up tonight at 9. And then we'll see you back here on Monday. See you tonight. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.